97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
Welcome back. I'm Ryan Recker, filling in for Mark Reardon. Got a couple of days together. If you want to find me online at Ryan Recker or Ryan Recker Radio. I find that my sports watching has pretty much gone off a cliff, so things like All-Star games aren't really on my radar. But Ethan and Fred, you were telling me that it was pretty exciting yesterday, the MLB All-Star game.
Yeah, you know, I'm not a really big All-Star game fan either for other sports, but for baseball, I just love it because I don't think the players, you know, ease up or anything. They play just as hard in a baseball All-Star game, unlike a football one, you know, or hockey where you don't hit as hard. So I love to watch it. I've always loved to watch it. Try never to miss one. Enjoyed it in 2009 when it was here in St. Louis. But last night was just a surprise ending to me because I didn't even know that when a game ended or when a game went into extra innings that they would end it in what was called a swing-off. That was a new rule that was started in 2022. And I guess it was a few years earlier when a game in Milwaukee ended in a 7-7 tie. And they didn't want to go beyond 11 innings because they didn't want to waste the pitcher's arms and have that hurt them once they went back into the regular season. So I guess this was the solution they came up with in 2022, and this is the first time it's been used.
Yeah, well, let me just do a quick correction. I know that they hold back on the hits in the NHL, except if you're Chris Pronger at an All-Star game.
Ah, and there you
that
go.
Changes some things.
Aging yourself You're dating yourself here. It's been
Pronger
a while since he's been in there.
Never held back. That's the type of guy that didn't mess around even at an All-Star game. Remember he pushed, he checked Justin Bieber up against the wall at a charity celebrity game.
I remember that.
It's Pronger. Okay, but how did this game end last night? So how did it finally resolve itself?
So they get into a swing-off because the American League was trailing at 1.6-0, and they came back, they scored their last two runs in the top of the ninth inning. So, and the National League doesn't score in the bottom of the inning. So everyone's, like Fred said, I thought they were going to extras as well. They announced the rules, how this home run derby swing-off went. Each team picked three players. Those three players got three swings. They could take as many pitches as they want, three swings.
And the swings, the pitchers were like bullpen pitchers, coaches.
Yes, like batting practice. It was like batting practice coaches. So they're just lobbing them in there, okay?
Right.
So it's like, okay, get your timing down, and then you got three swings. So the American League goes first. Brent Rooker hits two home runs. Stowers, what's it? Kyle Stowers?
Yeah,
Kyle Stowers, I think, for the Marlins goes first for the NL. He hits one. So it's 2-1 after one round. And you got to think about it. I mean, you're getting three swings. The fact that these guys are even able to hit home runs is absolutely amazing to me. And then next, Randy Arozarena, former Cardinal Randy Arozarena went. He hit one.
Right.
And then Kyle Schwarber, who is the home run king. Who plays for the Philadelphia Phillies, three swings, and he hits home runs on the first two. This was his last swing, the call by Joe Davis.
Tied at three!
That's MVP material if he gets a third
run. AL rallied in the game. NL has rallied in the swing.
Oh! With the hat-trick! Look out, Chop House! National League takes the lead 4-3.
Unbelievable.
So this swing was awesome too. He goes down to one knee and just watches it fly. So all of a sudden the NL's up 4-3. He went three for three. They had a little bit of more of a something Aranda. I didn't recognize the guy that
I didn't know who the next guy was.
A little bit of a less well known guy. That went for the American League last. He didn't hit any home runs, so Pete Alonso didn't even have to go. He would have been the last guy for the National League. So they had that in the bag. But a lot of people were upset with Aaron Boone, who's the manager of the Yankees. He managed the American League team last night. Like, why didn't you have Aaron Judge and Shohei? Well, Shohei was in the National League, but why wasn't he in? Like, why didn't you have all these superstars? And I guess people weren't connecting that these guys were probably already halfway back across the country to their homes. I mean, once they played, they were probably out of there. But anyway, it was an awesome end, a great game, and in a very creative way to wrap up the night and have it be so with pace.
And it was so much fun to watch and to follow, and then to actually see the players all on the field watching out of the dugout, just going crazy at every home run that's hit.
Yep.
You know, in that setting of an actual All-Star game was so unique.
Yeah, they had Ken Rosenthal and Kevin Burkhardt were interviewing each player right before they were about to walk up. Like, how you feeling? You feeling nervous? Like, it was fun. It was very much so head games, it felt like, too. The reporters did a great job with it. And every single part, it felt like, of the game itself was done very well by Major League Baseball.
And I would like to think that this would only be used for an All-Star game, you know, because now in extra innings, you put an extra, you know, a phantom runner on second base to try and hurry things along. I would hate, and I don't think it could ever get to the point where they would do swing-offs. And I don't know if I really like that.
Shocked that name, if it ever got
swing-off.
To that point.
I know. But, you know, it's kind of like a penalty kick or a penalty shot at the end of a, you know, a football or a hockey game, soccer game.
Right.
A lot of fun.
I like that you called
though.
It football. That was football. Yeah. Yeah. The proper European way to say it. But I think after the NHL did that Nations tournament and they saw the popularity along with it, they realized that all these other leagues need to make it more fun for their all-star competitions. So they're only going to lean into more things like this in the future. They're going to find ways to incorporate it to make it more enjoyable to watch when normally there's nothing at stake and you don't care about these other players other than maybe the ones that are on your own team. This will make it a little bit more enjoyable, I think, and push along. I think the NBA even thought about doing something similar to change up their maybe a tournament style. Yeah, they should. All right, so we're going to get to Sue's News coming up after the break. I'm Ryan Recker filling in. Don't go anywhere. 97.1 FM Talk. Ryan Recker filling in today and tomorrow. We're going to have some fun. You know, one of my favorite segments is a little segment called Sue's News.
These allegations are deeply concerning.
Does the president have any comment?
We're not going to comment.
It's not clear messaging.
No. And now, Sue's News. Brought to you by Sue.
Well, it's exciting. It's National AI Day. National Hot Dog Day. Which, didn't we find out everyone was supposed to take 30 minutes off your life?
What?
You remember that study? Yeah.
Really? Well, I remember it, but I don't know. It was 30 minutes for every hot dog?
Yeah, I think that was a thing. Let me Google while we...
I was going to say, because I had two today, so that means I shaved an hour off my life.
I'm hoping you make it till 6 p.m.
Well, I hear that, Fred. We are not prepared. I don't know. I heard that, then I thought, you know what? That's I thought about that for a week, and then we had some Nathan's, and I ate it. Okay. You know, it's like, okay, well, how bad can it be? Mm-hmm. National Corn Fritters Day and National Personal Chef Day. Mm-hmm. Now, I like to cook, but I do have personal chef day fantasies every now and then. You know, and you could just have them cook for you. I don't know how much that costs. It must be ungodly.
I have to imagine you're probably doing okay if you have one.
Yeah, yeah. Oprah has one. I do not.
Don't some athletes have them?
I think so, Fred.
Yeah.
You know, that way they stay, you know, eating enough protein or whatever they have to do and certain amount of calories. I think so.
So am I under the impression if you have a personal chef, they'll make you whatever you want, or do they just preemptively make you things to eat? How does it work?
I think since they're your personal chef, they do what you want. So if you say, this is how
much food you waste in a given week. If they're just preparing based on your whim, they got to be throwing away so much food from these rich people.
I
imagine it probably depends on the person because, you know, I know there are, like, for the Netflix series Quarterback, a couple of the quarterbacks had personal chefs, and it went through, like, the things that they cooked. And the way that they kind of made it seem is like, okay, I want things along the line of this, but get creative and do this with it. But it probably depends on the person, how picky you are, what your goals are, and stuff like that. So I imagine it's not as simple as, like, this is what I want tonight. But in some cases, it might be.
Yeah. And I figure if they're making me what I want, I'm going to eat all of it, right? I'm not going to say, here's 32 things I'm in the mood for. What I really want is blah, blah.
I think I'd tell them, make me as healthy as you can, but make it taste okay.
Oh, that's a, yeah.
Which I guess that's everyone's desire, I guess.
Yeah, but if you have the money, then like maybe it's realistic.
Yeah.
That's true.
They're slipping in laxatives and things into your body. You don't know about it.
And there is Ryan Bucker.
On this day in history, 90 years ago, it was in 1935 in Oklahoma City, of all places, that they installed the very first parking meters. Parking meters are 90 years old. There's no way they envisioned the versions of that they are today, where you have an app and you plug in the number, blah.
I mean, I probably have put some coins into 90-year-old parking meters in my life.
Yes. Yes, there are some oldies around. And on this day in history, 53 years ago in 1972, was when Smokey Robinson gave his last concert with the Miracles. And I didn't realize, I looked for audio from that specific concert, couldn't find it. But 1972 seems late, because when I hear those songs, I always think of them as 60s. But apparently, maybe they did a reunion that year. And I cannot believe this is 26 years ago. In 1999 was when JFK Jr. and his wife Carolyn and her sister Lauren Bessette died when John John's single engine plane crashed into the ocean near Martha's Vineyard. 26 years ago.
Wow.
And I didn't know this part. Doesn't that freak you out, just the time? 2 years ago, the Kennedy family agreed to pay the Bessettes $15 million for the loss of their daughters. I didn't know that.
Wow.
Was that a story?
I missed it, too. That took a long time.
Yeah.
Why? I guess I don't understand when it comes to an accident like that.
I don't think it was a... Well, I could be making this up. I don't think it was a lawsuit. Maybe they just decided, we've got to do something. I don't know why it would be on the 24th year, but yeah. It's just very interesting. Now, you guys were talking about the All-Star Game, and I do have a little audio that we haven't used yet, because one of the things they did this drive you guys nuts that they had that they had Clayton Kershaw mic'd up?
I loved it.
Oh, it was amazing.
Because I thought it was cool, and he could talk to the play-by-play guys while he was pitching. And here he is asking John Smoltz which pitch he should go with next. It's hilarious.
What do you want, Smoltz? What do you want?
Cutter in, slider in.
I don't throw a cutter.
He doesn't slider in. Slider. Cutter.
Son of a. That was short.
How about this splitty? Break out the splitty.
All right, what's the count? 2-2. Yeah, this 2-2. Is so weird talking to you guys.
It's kind of weird for us too.
Right.
That was great.
I love that.
So much fun.
Exactly. They know how to make fun. That play with fun.
I mean, if I was in the booth, I would have said, hit him.
Yep, hit him. You would have. Yes, you would have.
Hit the batter.
Oh, my gosh. All right, you've heard of the Nielsen ratings for TV, of course. They've been around for decades. What I didn't realize is it's only been 4 years that they've been tracking TV viewing by platform. And for the first time, over-the-air networks made up less than 20% of viewing in June. Less than 20%. Wow. That's how much people are streaming. It dropped to 18.5% from 20.1% in spring. And had they kept records longer, of course, we would have really charted the decline. But the fact that it's under 20%, this is something any of us from the days when we had four channels could barely comprehend. That is nuts. So, yeah, we just mainly do the streaming now. Even the kids and the adults.
Pretty much.
That's all I do.
Well, except for sports.
Yeah,
I mean,
sports
I guess
is
you
the
could stream sports,
on.
But I pretty much watch sports.
I mean, do you count the FanDuel like as streaming now? I mean, if you pay for the streaming and use the app, I mean, it's just crowd does not like streaming. They are fans of the oldies. No, it's crazy. It is.
It makes you wonder how much of that 18.5% is sports.
Yeah.
It's got to be a large percentage. I think probably football, people watch a little bit more than baseball, so that may be why it slipped under 20. I don't know.
Yeah, true. Okay. It is the low point.
Exactly.
Once you get into football, it'll probably, I imagine, pick up a little more again. Yeah.
Exactly. Ryan, did you see Superman yet?
I did.
And was it preaching?
It wasn't preaching, but I didn't like it. I was so let down by Superman. Everyone loves it. Like, everyone goes to the theater and they say, oh, this is so great. Everything's so wonderful. And I just did not see a wonderful movie. I was just so let down.
Ryan, you were like a kid in a candy store talking about it last week.
What? I don't want to ruin too much, but...
What let you down? Was it some particular thing or just the whole deal?
Well, he was kind of like a man-child, so he's like, okay, I have my career, and I'm working in the big city, but internally, I'm still struggling like a teenager struggles, and he was basically there just to stop heavy things from falling on people. Like, that was his main purpose in the movie, and I was like, oh, come on, you're Superman. What am I watching here? Made me so disappointed.
How was Ryan? Lex Luthor? He kind of looked goofy to me, but he's a talented actor.
Good actor. I didn't like the character either, because I think in a lot of these modern superhero movies that you can at least sympathize a little bit with the bad guy. Like, he kind of makes a point, but he's wrong. But he makes a point.
Right.
There's no point to be made by Lex Luthor here. It is just purely driven by hatred. And you're like, see, it's just so one-dimensional to me. I just don't like it.
Fred. Hey, Ryan, next hour, let's try and get you some therapy on this Superman issue.
All right,
5:33, please. We're going to have movie reviewer Christian Toto come on and talk to you about the movie.
I can't wait. I want to see what he thinks.
Oh, that's funny. Well, apparently a favorite in the movie is Crypto, Superman's foster dog. Did you like Crypto?
Yes. Loved him. Yes.
Okay. And they say it's probably no coincidence that since the movie came out, there's been an increase in Google searches about pet adoption. The phrase "adopt a dog near me" has increased by 513%.
Wow.
Good.
There was also a 163% increase in, quote, rescue dog adoption near me and adopt a schnauzer, all of that. And Crypto is a mutt, but he shares some resemblance with a schnauzer. He was created with CGI, but modeled after James Gunn-owned rescue dog Ozu.
Oh.
It's kind of cute. It's a sweet
That's
story.
That's super cool. Yeah.
Gunn said he heard about the surge in dog adoption and said this film has been a lot of blessings for me, but that's a big one, so thank you to the people. I thought that was great. All right, I like Fred Armisen. He's weird.
I do, too.
But I like him. And Ethan, will you go ahead and play this? Because it's okay. Fred Armisen has a new album coming out. It's called 100 Sound Effects. And it's a comedy album of real sound effects. Here's a preview. This is tuning a guitar, but it's still out of tune. That's right.
If you are not with the band,
and this is the sound of a bar closing after the band finishes.
If you're not with the venue or the crew, please leave. We are closed. If you're not with the venue or the crew, please leave.
The door.
Yeah. That just kills me.
Okay,
I knew that Ryan would get a kick out of it as much as I did. And the album comes out September 26th.
Oh, wow.
You can get other tracks, Ryan, including Businessman on the Phone and Plane Still at Gate or Haunted House Piano.
Wow, oh my gosh, this is what he does best.
Yes.
Fred Armisen, that is so genius, but so artsy and... I'll listen to an album like that and just laugh the whole time.
I knew you would. Finally, in Sue's News, we have today's random fact. Wi-Fi is not short for wireless fidelity. It's actually not short for anything. The people who created it just liked the name because it rhymed with hi-fi.
Oh, I like the name, too. That's very nice.
Wi-Fi. Uh-huh. That's it for Sue's News.
Thank you, Sue. Let's go to Your Money Now with Fox Business, 97.1 FM Talk. Don't go anywhere. Corey DeAngelis coming up next. Joining us now is truly someone that is making a difference. Corey DeAngelis, he's a senior fellow at the American Culture Project, author of The Parent Revolution, Rescuing Your Kids from Radicals Ruining Our Schools. Corey, thank you so much for coming on. We always have the pleasure of getting some time from you, and I'm telling you, you really are doing fantastic work.
Hey, thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, I looked on Twitter, and we are following each other, and I look back, and I think we first messaged each other in 2021. I mean, I got to say,
when all this was starting to blow up.
I know, because you became part of the national spotlight because you were making, of course, school choice and talking about putting kids first and trying to let the money go where the kid is, where the parent wants the kid to be, give them the freedom to do that. It was such a radical idea because not a lot of states were on board at first, but really so many states did eventually get on board, and it became such a big national trend that's, I don't know, is a majority of states now on board with what you're calling for? It seems like you're probably past the halfway point.
Yeah. Yeah, majority of states overall have some form of private school choice, allowing the money to follow the child to schools that align with their values. But only 17 have universal school choice, which is kind of Milton Friedman's idea that's come to fruition, which is everybody. There's no picking and winners and losers. It's full-throated school choice, regardless of income, background, or zip code. And that's a majority of Republican-led states already. And that they're the ones that are kind of moving the football on the issue of supporting parental rights in education. The Democrats, they're a wholly owned subsidiary of the teachers' unions. The teachers' unions funnel about 99% of their campaign contributions to the Democrat Party each and every election cycle. Wash, rinse, repeat. It's a form of money laundering. And we just found out that Becky Pringle and Randy Weingarten had positions at the Democrat National Committee. These are teachers' union bosses having a seat at the table at the DNC. They're basically the same organization at this point. And if it wasn't obvious to anybody last year or this year, it should be obvious now. This month, the NEA had their annual convention in Portland, Oregon, of all places. And they had these resolutions that were just so political. They had nothing to do with education. They just read like a declaration of war on the Trump administration. They basically had one resolution where they dedicated thousands of dollars to have a policy to call Trump a fascist. And guess what? In that resolution, they misspelled the word fascism. I mean, you can't make this stuff up.
They'll have to write it on the board 100 times to make sure they get it right next time. But talking about the money laundering thing, I think the whole idea of the union is to try to represent the parents and kids to make sure they're getting the best education, not the Democratic Party, which they have been doing so much over the years. There seems to be a clear conflict of interest there. And you look at these major metropolitan cities, St. Louis included, the school systems are failing these kids. They're not getting any better. There's no signs they're getting better. I think the only hope is that the parent has some choice to be able to get their kid into a spot where they will flourish, something that is more tuned to what they want. But we're not seeing that in all places.
Exactly. And the ironic part is those same teachers union presidents, they send their own kids to private schools. They know better than anybody else that their schools that they manage are failure factories. They won't send their own children there. I mean, Chicago, for example, they have 50 public schools with 0% math proficiency rates. Not a single kid proficient in or math or reading in 50 Chicago government-run institutions that we call public schools. And they spend $30,000 a kid there. It's not a money issue. You're right. It is about competition. If you give families the choice, if they could vote with their feet, the school boards, instead of calling them domestic terrorists or labeling them as evil people or cutting off their mics, guess what the school boards will do? And the public schools will up their game in response to competition. They'll start to treat parents as partners in the relationship instead of the enemy. They'll treat them as customers. And so we've seen this in Florida, other school choice states. As they've expanded choice, the outcomes in the public schools have improved. It's a rising tide that lifts all boats. It's a win-win solution. But people like Randy Weingarten, they're off the rails right now. Becky Pringle just yelling at her annual convention of the teachers union, which, by the way, they chose one person as their teacher of the year this year at the NEA annual convention. And that person, guess what they said? They let the mask slip at their speech for everyone to see, everyone to hear. They said that her job of teaching, of all things, is quote unquote deeply political and always had been. I mean, that's free advertising for homeschooling.
Well, I think we have the clip. I want to play one for you, but just to back up for a second, the National Education Association and their conference, Becky Pringle's their president. And I wanted to just real quick, I went to Google and I typed in NEA president. And the next thing that auto corrected in was the word rant. So I'm like, oh, that's interesting. So people are searching for this, but don't give Google credit yet, because what comes up on the AI overview is her quote unquote rants are more accurately described as powerful speeches. So, they put rant into the search term, but then the Google AI has to say, no, you're wrong for calling it a rant. So can I play a clip from the acceptance speech?
Ahead.
This is clip number 22.
We cannot fear the future, diversity, equity, and inclusion. Say the words. Say the words. Say them. You are powerful. You are the NEA. Hold your head high. Hold your head high. NEA.
Holy freedom!
Freedom! Hold your head high!
This is hard to listen to. Okay, I want to get your reaction to that.
Oh, man, the inmates are running the asylum. She is insane. And that's not taking things out of context. That is her entire speech. She does this and just screams and yells. She's not really saying anything, if you notice. She just repeats the same thing over and over again. And it's, you know, she promoted DEI. Not a word about math, reading, or writing, because they're failing in that category. They're injecting politics into the classroom. And when you see these annual conventions, they really just show you why we're failing on an international scale. We spend more than any other country on the planet, and we're an international embarrassment. Only a quarter of kids nationwide are proficient in math, according to the nation's report card. And it's because people like Becky Pringle have politicized education. I went to the NEA today and did a press conference here in D.C. to call for Congress to revoke their federal charter. They have one. They're the only labor union that has a federal charter, the backing of Congress. They've had it for over 100 years, and now it's time to reconsider. Today, lawmakers on Capitol Hill introduced a bill to get rid of their federal charter. So it's about dang time, and it should be a common sense. Even if you support unions, you should pass this policy because, well, if you're Randy Weingarten, your union doesn't have a federal charter. Nobody else's union has one. The NEA gets special privileges that they don't deserve.
Well, part of it, too, and this is something that Becky Pringle was doing as part of the NEA, defended illegal immigrants during a protest against immigration raids that occurred throughout the city. So what kind of things are they teaching in these schools, and is it appropriate for them to be protesting ICE inside of schools?
No, it's not appropriate. And they're not teaching math, reading, and writing. They're shoving gender ideology down children's throats. They're trying to push critical race theory, a divisive Marxist concept. And they teach kids to hate their country. We now have a nationwide survey out this year showing that 36% of high school students reported that their teachers almost daily or often said that America is a fundamentally racist nation. So, I mean, when you have people like Becky Pringle you see on stage, it should not surprise us anymore. We cannot continue to send our children to Caesar for their education and be surprised when they come home as Romans, as the great Vodi Bakum once famously said. The good news is I think parents are waking up. They're not so surprised anymore, and they're demanding school choice, and there's a revolution unfolding right before our eyes. We've had more advancement on school choice in the past 4 years than in the preceding four decades. And we can thank Randy Weingarten and Becky Pringle, the lady screaming in that clip, because they've inadvertently done more to advance school choice and homeschooling than anybody could have ever imagined, because they've gotten so far left, overly political. Even some of the Democrats are saying, what in the heck is going on here? I want my kids to know how to read. I want the basics. Yeah. I thought the schools were supposed to be about education, not indoctrination. So I went to the NEA and said, hey, we should pull their federal charter. Becky Pringle didn't show up for whatever reason, but the NEA did block me on X.
One of many, I'm guessing. But you've been doing fantastic work for the last, I mean, years and years. You're one of the early adopters that got nationwide attention. And I mean, this is not a new concept per se, but I think you've done a great job moving the ball forward and putting the argument in a way that is very pro-parent, pro-child, and making it very common for them to understand that if your kid is part of a failing public school right now, they're forcing you into that situation. You shouldn't be forced into it. You should have some option because you love your kid. You want them to have the best future. And if you want to do something about it, you should have the option to do something about it. The option can't always be go pay 10 grand a year at a public or at a private school because not everyone can afford that. But there are other options out there that kids are flourishing under that parents just didn't know about. So let me just make sure people know if people wanted to learn more about this, maybe they're not happy with what their kid's getting right now in a public school. What's the first thing you would encourage that parent to do?
I'd say fight for your legislature to pass school choice. I mean, it's your money. We're already spending the money. We spend $20,000 per kid per year in the government-run school system on average nationwide. That's about 50 to 60% higher than average private school tuition in this country. So you shouldn't have to pay twice. You shouldn't have to pay once out of pocket for private school and then pay again for the government school that you're not using through the tax system. It's deeply unjust. It's unfair. It discriminates on the basis of zip code. So fight for change in your state if it already happened, hasn't already. And if it has, seek out those options. Apply for scholarships. Some states have them available for everybody, regardless of income. So this is the way forward. This is how we improve the public schools. And this is how we ultimately create more options for parents, because once the demand is there, supply will meet that demand. You'll have more conservative private schools popping up, independent private mm-hmm. schools, ones with specialized missions that you're not getting in today's climate. So I'd recommend you do that. You can also help me out with the Teachers Union tip line that I just started. If you want to report any craziness that's going on in the public school system, you can find that at the American Culture Project, AmericanCultureFoundation.org.
Perfect. Senior fellow at the American Culture Project and AmericanCultureFoundation.org. And then author of The Parent Revolution, Rescuing Your Kids from Radicals Ruining Our Schools. Cora DeAngelis, thank you so much for joining us. It's always a pleasure. And I got to say, you're right on the forefront of this, and you've done some fantastic work.
Thank you so much for having me.
I'm Ryan Recker, filling in for Mark Reardon. Coming up after the break, we're going to talk to Jay Bowes, a CEO of Bitcoin Benz Crypto Club. What's going on with Crypto Week? Why should we be paying attention to it? Why is everyone going crazy about it? We'll talk to Jay after the break on 97.1 FM Talk. And joining us now is the CEO of Bitcoin Benz Crypto Club, Jay Bowes. Thank you so much for coming on today.
It's my pleasure, Ryan. Good to be here.
So it's Crypto Week. There's a lot of emphasis on it. A lot of people are paying attention to it. Bitcoin, people are paying close attention to it the last couple of years. So let's talk about the state of cryptocurrency right now and why a week like this may or may not be exciting to you. I'm guessing it's exciting, though.
It sure is. It sure is, Ryan. You know, money is changing as we know it. It's not just becoming digitized. It's becoming decentralized. It's becoming borderless, and it's becoming programmable. You know, people are losing faith and trust in the traditional banking system as inflation and debt and $37 trillion eroding savings. The 401k plans are in disarray. And what Bitcoin is essentially doing in this context is it's providing an exit ramp. It's not just about getting rich. It's really about staying free and having a real life, real money, people's money that you can own. So it's really about our future and how we live it.
Yeah, the technology is very fascinating to me, the idea of how it works, but it's still the practical nature of it, the ability to trade it, buy it. It seems less practical than having a debit card or a credit card.
Quite the contrary. You know, think about Bitcoin as digital gold. So, except this gold I can send across the world in seconds to anybody, anywhere. No one can catch it. No one can inflate it. No one can freeze it. No one can steal it. The fact is that only 21 million Bitcoin exist. So your money printer in the Federal Reserve can go burr and keep deflating your money. And it's fully decentralized. So you don't have a CEO of a company called Bitcoin Corp. It doesn't exist. It belongs to you, the people. It's verified by thousands of nodes like the internet, hacking away and hashing away on blockchain. But the reality is, it's real money. And I fully understand, Ryan, look, not yeah. all crypto is Bitcoin. Bitcoin is the signal. Everything else is the noise. It's almost 63-64% of the crypto market cap, right? This is the currency that is being picked up by the central governments, by sovereign nations, by nation states, by corporations to put on their treasury. So imagine you could send peer-to-peer money from anywhere to anywhere on this planet. Look, 30 years ago, 20 years ago, if you said, I'll be able to contact anyone on the planet anytime I want through this device called a cell phone, you'd have thought that's crazy. If I told you today that you don't need PayPal, you don't need Visa, and you don't need any of these banks in between to send money to wherever you want, however much you want, not wait for the bank to open at 10 o'clock to send a wire transfer, and you can do it, you said that's a miracle. Well, it's a miracle. That's happening right now.
Yeah. Well, I want to make sure people know how to look you up online. Where can they go if they were trying to learn more about this?
They just go to bitcoinben.io. bitcoinben.io, and you can go to our website. It'll link to all our clubs. They're opening a club in Missouri in just a few short months. We have clubs in Sarasota, in Nashville, in Boston. We're opening our Las Vegas club on the 2nd of August. We have a club, physical club, in Dallas. So what we believe is that Bitcoin should matter to everyday Americans, and they should not have to be scared about how to open a wallet or how to send $10 to your friend. You can actually walk into Steak and Shake and pay with your Bitcoin wallet today. No dollars involved, right? So, yeah. And so we have these physical clubs where people can walk in. It's not the amorphous internet where I'm not sure what site is good or bad. You walk in, there's a friendly face. We are the local face of Bitcoin. We're building something very special here, Ryan, a community powered by, you know, a movement for financial freedom. We have education classes. You come and meet like-minded people. Local businesses come in. They participate. No jargon, no tech talk. Just talk about money.
There you go.
Our money, liberty, and opportunity.
All right. So bitcoinben.io, that's the address?
That's it.
Cool. And, of course, the club here in Missouri, you can learn more about that. Jay Bose, thank you so much for joining us this afternoon.
My pleasure.
Whole different world out there. People listening, it's good. Even if you're not going to buy any, it's good probably for you to understand what is going on because it is the future. There's no question about that. Chris Klemm joining us after the break, former Yuma Sector Border Patrol Chief. Coming up, I'm Ryan Recker filling in for Mark Reardon on 97.1 FM Talk.
Get more at 97.1talk.com.